This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
Thank you for listening to the Covert Nerd Podcast. I really appreciate the time that you give me. Before we get into the episode, if you can think of somebody that would like this topic that you're about to listen to, please pause the podcast and share it with them. You can also go to covertnerd.net and look at previous episodes and different ways that you can get in touch with me. Let me know what you think. Without further ado, let's dive right in and nerd it up. We're ready to go with some 90s comics characters this time. So the edgier and darker series, we're moving into our favorite 90s characters. And we've got Al and Ben here from Omug Comics to help out with all the nostalgia and all the comic book investment tips that Ben can provide. So thanks, guys.
Pleasure to be here.
Sticking with tradition, if you're not familiar with the show, but we always try to start off with who's the artist, and Al, being the artist extraordinaire of the show, is amazing at guessing who the artist is. It's so funny. We go to comic book shops, and Al like, oh, hey, that's John Byrne, or hey, that's Jim Lee, or whatever. And it's just impressive how Al can entertain us with his ability to guess the artist. So we're going to do that today. Are you ready, Al?
No, but let's do it anyway.
No. All right. So we'll start with the first one here. All right, Al, there's your first one. Wonder Woman. And it should preface the listener. These are all pulled from the 90s. So these are all 90s covers or 90s art.
Man, you know, you always trip me up with the DC because I just didn't read a lot of DC. But I'm looking at the musculature and stuff, and it looks like somebody who went on to Image, but kind of looks like a Q-bert.
Well, I got another cover for you by the same artist, just to kind of help you out a little bit.
I'm truly stumped on this one. I got nothing. I'm probably gonna recognize the name and kick my that is John Byrne. Okay,
it is John Byrne. Yes.
Wow, that is John Byrne doing 90s style.
I stumbled on this, and I didn't realize he did some Wonder Woman art in the 90s, but evidently he did.
Yeah, so he's really leaning into the 90s style in that. That's fascinating. I didn't realize he did that.
Yeah. So, okay.
Huh, all right.
Here's the next one. Here's one. I know you read these when you were younger.
Oh, that's Wolf Cortacio.
Oh, yeah. I had a backup, this one from X-Men that he did. But
also Wolf,
Yeah. So that's Wolf. All right. That's an easy one.
Yeah.
All right.
He was great.
That helps. Great 90s artist. All right. How about this one?
Oh, that's Jay Lee.
Jay Lee. Yep. His is very distinct.
It's very graphic and dynamic.
Yeah. The spider webs there, you can see. Very dark. You got a lot of shadow, or at least on this one, a lot of shadows.
He leaned into the shadows a lot back then, and very angular faces and exaggerations. And if you look at his the chapel is I think what really put him on the map was that really graphic image of chapel for their first cover. But if you look at his stuff now, it's very simple.
Oh really?
It's very clean, very simple, it's really sharp, it's really good. He's more like a Rockwell style illustrator now than a comic book artist.
Oh, okay. So he's changed styles, you would say, a little bit?
He's changed the tone a lot. Okay. I mean, you can still look at it and tell immediately it's Jay Lee based on how he draws faces and stuff, but it's a different approach. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right. One more here.
Oh, that's Greg Capullo.
Yes. Good job. Oh, man. All right. Because Greg, let's see, this is X-Force 21. Here, at least being the amateur guy I am, but so compared to Jay Lee, it's not so linear. Like if you look at
Capullo is more, at this stage of his career, he was more of the traditional, the house style, like we were talking last week. Certain styles of, almost like a generic style, but it's very dynamic, it's bold, and he kind of followed in that, but he had enough quirks about him that it set it apart. He was still very 90s, and watching his work develop has been fascinating too, because he's still one of the top guys.
Here's one from the late 90s.
Oof.
I think I even had this issue. I'm pretty sure I did.
that coloring is just awful.
There's so many of these things are out, like you can't tell what's going on here.
No, they really, when they learned how to do digital coloring, man, they really leaned into it way too hard.
They did. This is the whole Onslaught series. So it was like 97, I think, ish.
This would lead me to believe that they didn't learn how to do digital coloring.
They really didn't know what they had. they just overdid everything, and it was just awful. But that's one of the Cuber boys.
Yes, Adam Cuber. Yep.
I can never tell them apart, but yeah. Was that
supposed to be Magneto?
Well,
it's Onslaught, so it's like I think that he's an amalgamation, and Magneto is a part of it, but it's not just Magneto.
It's a Magneto and Professor Xavier combination called Onslaught. So they had a whole series. The Heroes Reborn series came from that, with Rob Liefeld coming back and doing some art for him, and it was a big deal. I kind of remember. It was kind of cool, but
yeah.
But okay.
This cover alone would make me not want to buy that.
Yeah, that coloring is terrible.
Well, it was in the infancy, wasn't it? You know, the digital coloring.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Ugh.
Yeah, that's Adam Kubert, the Kubert boys.
Yep.
All right. Well, good job, Al. Only Thanks. One that got you was Byrne, so excellent job.
I mean, to be fair, that was Byrne dramatically changing his style.
Yeah, yeah, that was this cover. It's kind of a cool cover, though. But
it is a good cover. Yeah, I kind of, like, at first, it's got a Frank Miller vibe to it.
It does, yes.
Yeah.
In fact, when I was going through ones to find you, it was this or Frank Miller, so I was like, oh, I'm going to do a Byrne one. That's a little different, so.
Yeah. But, yeah, you're not going to get me on Frank Miller. I will get Frank Miller.
They do have a similar style, though, but I don't know what age-wise, or if they one copied the other, or I don't know. I think Frank Miller's a little younger.
Frank Miller's younger. John Byrne was one of those guys that everybody wanted to draw like John Byrne back in the 80s. And
in the
late 70s and 80s, John Byrne was one of those guys. It was like John Byrne, Neil Adams.
Yeah.
You know, they were like the pinnacles.
They were. Yeah, John Byrne, Chris Claremont on X-Men. That's just synonymous with X-Men in the 80s. You don't get any more iconic than those guys. So, all right. Well, thank you, Al, for enlightening us with your art expertise. So let's get started with the... Yeah. I figured the Jay Lee and a few others, like, he'll know those probably for sure. So, maybe I should have put John Byrne at the end. Get your brain going. And so... All right. So let's go ahead and get started here. I guess we didn't discuss who wants to go first. So I'll just go first so we can, that way don't put either one of you on the spot. So I'm going to start with X from the Dark Horse Comics. I don't know if anybody remembers, but they had this in 1993, they, referring to Dark Horse, wanted to get into the hero world, create their own hero universe, because Image created their own. Of course, Marvel and DC had their own. Started talking about it in 1990, but they finally rolled it out in 1993. Their hero or comics greatest world universe that had several different characters in four different cities, and they kind of wanted to create this universe. One of those was the Hero X. Sold a lot better than any of the others, but that's not saying much because they didn't really sell a whole lot of these. I don't know. Did you guys buy any of these Comics Greatest World?
Okay. I remember seeing them. I remember when, seeing the ads for it when they launched and seeing the different visuals, especially of X.
Yeah.
But yeah, it never, it always just seemed like a desperate attempt to try and, you know, be another Image.
I will give him credit. I thought this character was pretty decent. The character was, like I said, called X. He's from the city of Arcadia. Like I said, there's four different cities. His first story started out in Dark Horse Comics back in 92. And then in 93, the Comics Greatest World Weekly is what they called it. It was 16 issues and only $1 each. So I thought that the marketing, at least in my opinion, was not a bad deal, because a person could get in for $1. $16 gets you the whole universe. Now, I think the pages, you were only 16 pages or 18 pages. It was pretty small, but it was enough to get you into the character, into the issue, and see if you liked it and test the waters for only $1. And now Ben will appreciate this. Now you can go buy Comics Greatest World, the whole entire series, for only $12.95.
I mean, what more could you ask for?
Yeah, that's so now you could dip your toes into a 30-year-old universe for less than $13.
Right.
Did they just print these enough of these to hand them out to every school kid in the country or something? How are they not appreciated at all?
I think I haven't read, but I just remember when it came out, every shop had it. So I have a feeling they kind of flooded the market a bit.
Yeah.
To say the least. So anyway, this X character, and he started, like I said, his own series in 93, went all the way through 1996. He'd had this little calling card. If you were a bad guy, he took on the crime lords in the city, and he would give you basically kind of a warning shot. He'd send you a picture, and it would have an X, you know, a one slash through the photo, mean you're being warned. And yeah, here we go. One slash means you're being warned. Two slashes means it's time for your death because you've crossed the line. And that's kind of was his little MO. I like this photo here, Al. Look at the leg seems kind of off, but and the hand seems weird, but that's just me.
No, it seems pretty solid. Good proportions.
Doug Mankey did the first.
All right.
Did the artwork. And let's see, Stephen Grant did the script. He has a little bit of a healing factor. It's kind of his superpowers. And he uses red a lot because red symbolizes violence and kind of part of his scariness, I guess, for lack of a better word. He has the torn up cape and X on the boots. I mean, he really, the character, they really leaned into the X theme. They did a relaunch in 2013 of it. It didn't last too terribly long. So I just didn't, the whole Comics Greatest World just never really took off. One thing that did hurt him, and I agree, commentator did mention that they didn't roll this out till late 93. And we all know by late 93, 94, the comic book universe was starting to lag. And so it was just kind of bad timing as well. So
yeah, you're behind the curve.
Yeah. And he was definitely the anti-hero that we all think and know of. So he was not the Batman where he refused to kill, stuff like that. But I pulled up some pictures from.
Is he wearing a spiked neck collar?
Yes, he is. He is wearing a spiked neck collar. And then here's.
And you know, 94, this is when Pulp Fiction came out too. Like he really does look like he's in a gimp suit. Like it looks like
well and the padlock on his
collar.
Oh man.
They went too hard on so 90s.
So do you think it's just leaning into the anti-hero too much?
I think it's leaning into the 90s too much and trying to be, you know, extreme and also trying to find clever ways to rip off Spawn without ripping off Spawn.
You're not wrong. So here is a cover. This is what really encapsulates the 90s. If I can get the cover.
Oh yeah.
Pull it. There you go. So we've got the cape, the frayed cape in the background with fire everywhere. I've probably told you guys this story, but yeah, I showed this to my son at the time. He was a teenager. He's like, wow, this just screams 90s.
It really does.
And I'm like, yeah, you're not wrong. But let's see. There's some other ones. You know, here's another one with the cape and the gun and the collar. Oh. Just fire in the background.
Right.
So
I just want to know, how much effort did they put into naming this guy Hero X or whatever? Like, like, was there like an actual like board meeting where they're like, all right, I got this character, he's kind of like an assassin type guy, and like they're just like throwing out names, and then someone's like X, and they're like, okay. Or did they is it the opposite, like somebody had a note that's like, oh, Hero X, we'll come up with a name later, and then they're just like, well, you know, we got to release this next week, so I guess his name is Hero X.
Yeah, I like your theory there, Ben. Or maybe they came up with the gimmick of, you know, one slash means a warning, two slashes means you're dead, or maybe they combined them. I don't know. That's a good question. Right? It's a good character and not in a good run. I read like the first, I don't know, 10, 12 issues. I wouldn't say it's great, but it's good.
No, when he goes to stand up, he's going to choke himself when he's standing on his cape. He's yes. going to pull himself back because he's standing on his cape.
Yes. And he's only got one eye exposed. So if you're shooting a gun, from what I hear, with right. one eye, your depth perception isn't quite as good. So,
well, and his peripheral vision, he can't see anybody coming from his left side.
And yeah, oh. like, what is his alter ego?
Oh, gosh. I think he's the. They really don't reveal a whole lot, at least the part that I read. I think he was ex-military, if I remember correctly. Okay. I don't know that he goes out in public very much, at least the episodes I read. He has a lair in the sewers, and sure. that's kind of where his lair is at that he has.
Well, based off of the spiked collar and padlock necklace there, his backstory is probably he's probably the bassist in a crappy punk band.
Right.
Oh, yes. There you go. Yeah. X, the lead singer in a punk band.
His lair is the basement of a pawn shop.
But yeah, the a fun character. And like on his waist here, he has like some sort of girdle. I don't know what that is. But yeah, this again.
It looks like what boxers wear under their trunks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But. This is definitely just screams 90s. If you want to tell young people today what were 90s comics like, just show them this cover. And yeah. They'll be like, what am I looking at?
Just add a couple pouches on there and it's just.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of pouches, he has the threads and stuff. So yeah. I guess. But
that's how they were being different. They're like, you know, everyone's got pouches. We're just going to have a lot of laces and a lot of X work.
Right.
Exactly. And the artwork, I think it really is a lot like Dark Horse at the time. Because if you go read the Predator comics and like Star Wars, the Dark Empire or whatever it was, I can't remember what it, and the Aliens comics, stuff like that, the art is very similar. So it has that kind of rough, for lack of a better word, rough, gritty. And for this comic, it fits. But I said, I if you want to check out Comics Greatest World, it's only $13 to check out the whole series and you get a taste of all the characters. Only, let's see, they had 16 characters. Only two of them actually lasted more than a year, X and Ghost.
Wow. Yeah, Ghost is still around. She's been going strong.
Yeah, so she's been going strong. You're right. They had a crossover with X and Ghost a couple times. So,
in fact, if you communicate with Dark Horse Comics and want to submit artwork to try to be an artist there, they send you a Ghost script, and that's what you have to draw, is like 5 pages of a Ghost story.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's their marquee character, huh?
Yep. Huh. Or at least it's what they want to see for you to prove yourself.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Well, that's all I got on X. So who wants to go next?
I'll go. Let's talk about Blood Wolf.
All right.
Speaking of screaming 90s, just that name.
Yeah.
Like, if you just say that name, you're like, hey, I bet that character is created like in 92.
Right. So with Blood Wolf, here's a fun little nugget. He first debuted in the comic book Darker Image, #1. Because, you know, Image, of course, like their main money generator was just pumping out #1 issues. And I don't know if there ever was a Darker Image 2 or 3 or 4. I think it may have just been Darker Image 1. But I was such an early adopter to Ben's investment strategy.
Ground floor, baby.
I got two of them.
Got two of them.
Mine is worth like $2 now.
A whole $2. So, and you got that in what year? 93 when it came out?
Yeah, 92. When was this? Published. This was still under Malibu. This was early. Yeah, 91, 92. Oh, actually, 93. And it says here it's #1 of 4. So.
Oh, yeah. They had different covers. That's right. I remember this now.
Yeah. So this one is pretty fascinating. So this is like the Max's first appearance as well in Image. But Blood Wolf is just a complete Lobo knockoff. And this was obviously, this was his first appearance, and this was the first time I saw him, obviously. But I didn't even realize that they came out with a series after this. It makes sense. I'm not surprised by it.
Yeah.
But this story really is fascinating. And they even have Lobo. Lobo makes an appearance in this Darker Image story.
Did they have to get permission from DC, or did they just slip that in there, I wonder?
No, they just popped it in, because they don't say it's Lobo.
Oh, okay.
They just have, you know, a guy that looks like the original version of Logo, because, or Lobo, because, for instance, they also have, where'd it go? This guy here.
Oh, my Cable. Works.
Yep. Yep. So the whole story with this is there's a planet that Lobo is, or that Blood Wolf is traveling to via space bike that looks like a pistol. And somebody on that planet insulted his grandmother. So they're like, the emperor insulted his grandmother. So he's flying there for the sole purpose of getting revenge for his grandmother.
Oh, and man.
The whole thing is just insane, over the top. You know, like, you got heads flying off. It is a lot of fun, and I think it's some of Liefeld's best work in terms of the energy. And it's because he doesn't, when you look at it in this one, he's not overthinking it. One thing that I did find funny is they make sure to not use any four letter words.
Uh-huh.
And they dodge it every chance they get. Like, they use the word poop and crap and things like that.
Yes.
But they got heads flying off.
But yeah, I know. I was just going to say that the cover is.
Well, you got this right here.
Yeah.
You get this guy's head clean off, but then they're not going to curse. And it was, yeah. It's weird because, you know, Image was, we can do whatever we want. There's no comics code here. Like, why wouldn't you just, you know.
Yeah, but anyway, just lean all into it. If you're going to knock somebody's head off, I guess you're kind of, you've moved the goalpost so far.
Right. But either way, Blood, he was he was derivative. He was knockoff, but it was fun and it was exciting. And I was hooked.
You loved every minute of it.
I did. It was, you know, it was, like I said, it was just exciting.
I noticed. So this one, the writer was Andy Mangles.
And
what's that?
Ben and I, we met him. We sat next to him at a con.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Should ask him about Bloodwolf. Have him sign your Bloodwolf for you.
Right.
But I was noticing in the credits here, Sherry Liefeld is the business manager for Extreme Studios at the time. So his wife, Rob Liefeld's wife, yeah, is running Extreme Studios.
Probably because she got tired of watching all the money fly out the door.
As the third Wave Runner pulled into the driveway, right. She's like, hey, I think I should be in charge of this stuff.
Right. Rob's like, what? I can just write that. I got this idea, Blood Wolf with a U. We're going to spell it wrong.
That's right.
We're going to be edgy.
I'm not going to bother looking into copyrights and find out if there's a Blood Wolf spelled right. I'm just going to do this to be safe.
Yes, yes. But this this cover definitely encapsulates the Extreme Studios in the early 90s. This is Liefeld. This has, you could take the name Liefeld off of here and you would know exactly who it was.
You got the pouches, you got the not quite correct musculature and the veins and
right. I say, yeah, the muscles that don't exist in actual anatomy and
blood everywhere and yeah.
No the feet.
The lack of feet.
Lack of feet. Yeah. Remember we were talking about the blood, so they had Blood Wolf, Blood Strike, Young Blood. I think there was another one that was around that time. We were like, wow, Liefeld just leans into that.
Yeah.
There's nothing edgier than adding blood to your title.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe we should look into that, Al, for Lenny. We should just, you know, be like, Blood Lenny, badass trucker.
Yeah. That's right. Blood Lenny or Lenny Blood.
Yeah, Lenny Blood.
So
yeah.
A lady asked his full name. It's Lenny Blood.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I remember seeing this. I don't think I ever bought it, but I did have Darker Image, so I know I read the Blood Wolf, you know, short story in there that they had.
Yeah, so, it's goofy. It's silly, but it's fun. It's, you know, it's what comic books are supposed to be. So
see, yeah, well, exactly. I think there's four issues in this one. Did you have all four issues? Do you remember, Al?
No, I just have two copies of issue one.
The Darker Image. Okay, yeah. Well, if you would have gotten Blood Wolf number one, I'm looking at the price. So the cover price is $2.50. The going price on eBay right now is $2.50. So
wow.
You didn't lose any money.
Look,
see?
If you don't lose money, you're winning.
See? Ben Crane, he's going to make sure you don't lose money.
That's right.
All right. All right, Ben, what do you got for us for your first pick?
I'm going to start with my second of the two. So I'm going to start with Bishop, and mainly because he ties in with the Who's the Artist, because he was created by Willis Portacio and John Byrne. I usually liked my characters other than like the guys that I like from Image, because I was different and I liked Image. But the characters I chose for this, I picked them more for their powers than really anything else. So Bishop is from the future, obviously. He first appeared in Uncanny X-Men 282, I believe. At least that's what my...
first appearance was at the very back of that book.
At least that's what my Marvel Encyclopedia says. That's key to my investment strategies. You have to have all the Marvel Encyclopedias because they change, you know, from year to year. Kind of like a math textbook.
Right.
I don't know. I just always liked Bishop. I liked the time travel aspect to him. I liked his power of basically being able to absorb energy and then shoot it back at you, which in essence could make him more or less indestructible, which was unfortunate how they treated him in the Days of Future Past movie, where the Sentinels shot him with a beam and he eventually like exploded. It's like, no, he would just keep absorbing that energy and shooting it back at him.
Yeah.
So, right. I mean, not that that was like the worst part of that movie. I mean, the whole movie was garbage, but that just really frustrated me.
To be fair, though, those filmmakers are notorious for not using X-Men characters properly. I mean, look at Deadpool.
Right. Yeah. It was just unfortunate how they treated him. But it's funny, the more you get into like Bishop and Cable and the other time traveling characters, like I don't know how they kept that straight. You know, it's like, oh, he's from this timeline and he's this person's cousin, but actually this person's dad. And this, and it's like, what the hell? It's like that. You guys obviously don't know how time travel works. Clearly.
No.
Well, and wasn't Bishop in the future? He was a disciple of Xavier's teachings, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. He had a great look. He was a solid character. And I don't know. I haven't kept up on X-Men. I don't know what they've done with him or not done with him, but it seems a shame that it doesn't seem like they've done enough with him. They could have done.
Yeah, he was one of those characters that it seemed like he either just showed up for like special events or was just always in the background. But yeah, like they could have done, he could have been a marquee character, but I think they just didn't know what to do with him. Like they do with a lot of people. They're like, oh, he can do all this cool stuff. And they're like, all right, we're done with him now. It's like, no, just keep building on it. Keep going. You know, he could have had a whole run. I mean, he did have some of his own limited runs and stuff. He teamed up with different people and all that stuff. But he's just a cool character. He had a cool look. He had a cool power. So I always kind of like seeing him pop up. Not enough to actually like buy any of his solo books or anything like that. But
yeah. Yeah. Now that issue 281 and then 282 was, I loved the, I had a subscription at this time and this was the 281, 282, 283. That was excellent. Excellent run, yeah. I thought. But you're right, Al. He was just at the very tail end of 282.
Just like the last panel on the last.
Yeah, pretty much the last page. Yeah.
That's his first appearance. Yeah, and I think it was the same thing with Gambit. Like his or Jubilee was her first appearance. Was like one panel on one page is technically her first appearance. Like two issues before she actually, you know, fully appears.
They used him a lot more. Speaking of him being underutilized, they used him a lot more in the animated series of X-Men from the 90s. Like they had a whole story arc in like half a season or whatever of shows that involved Gambit or not Gambit, Bishop. I think that's actually where I might've got introduced to him is from that cartoon and then kind of started getting into him a little bit more from there. But yeah, he just was always cool to me. I always liked him.
He's fantastic. What happened to the other guys? The two other guys, did they die right away?
I think they died, if I remember correctly. Fitzroy killed him, I think.
No.
So they just wanted to introduce Bishop, of course. So they had to knock those two off. And
I mean, they had to have died. The fact that we're referring to them as those other guys.
Those other guys.
Well, I don't remember if they like went back and, you know, were able to go home and just bail on Bishop, or if they got wiped out.
Kind of a surprise. So this came out, what, 1990, I think? Or, well, maybe it was...
November of 91.
Okay, and it still had John Byrne.
Well, that was 282, was November of 91.
What was John Byrne's involvement?
He created the character, and on this one, issue 283, he's doing the words. So I don't know if that means... he's not the letterer.
Maybe maybe the writer?
The writer, I guess. Must have been the writer for this.
Huh.
That's what I was thinking. He was gone or definitely on the way out real soon after this.
Well, X-Men would have been happening. So I think Claremont jumped over to X-Men with Jim Lee.
Okay.
So maybe they brought him back in as a writer.
But Wills, is that how you pronounce his name, Al?
Yep.
Yeah. Excellent artist. He did really good on this stuff. That, like I said, the iconic cover of 281. Let me see if I can find it here. I love that cover. And it's, look at that. I mean, it's definitely, you can tell, Will, very blocky on some of that stuff, but in the mouths, kind of the mouths, they all have their mouths open.
Yeah.
That's kind of a Rob Liefeld thing, maybe. That's what he was copying. But yeah, really good cover. Only $1 for this. Wow, I kind of forgot that. And it's a fold-out cover, too.
And then Bishop, there was something that happened, right? Like he was coming back to prevent sort of Doomsday.
I think he went back, to take care of Fitzroy, but also he's trying to save Professor X, I think, in some form or fashion.
Yeah.
He was running it. This one might actually have some value, Ben.
I mean, I bet it does. You said it was was for $1 when it came out. You probably, $1.50, maybe even $2.
I'd say 10.
10?
I'd say 10.
Al is really diving into this investment opportunity, saying that it's worth 10.
Yeah.
Listen, it's the second appearance of Bishop, but it's a big issue. It's like his first full appearance.
That's true.
And, it is Will Spertasio, and pretty much all X-Men comics from that time are between $5 and $10 on average. You know, you have some rare exceptions, like Gambit's worth like, 60 to 100 or whatever. It's up there. Some big milestone issues are worth more, but yeah, typically $5-$10 for X-Men of that era.
I feel like if you only appear on like the very last page of a book, I mean, I understand you appear, but I don't think they should count that as the first appearance.
Yeah.
I think once you're actually in the book and like part of the story, that should be your first appearance.
Yeah.
But I guess in the most technical sense of the word, he appeared.
Yeah, and he's on the cover, and he's on the last page. So X-Men number 282 right now is valued at $25.
Ooh, see?
Not too bad.
Got a gold mine just sitting in a long box somewhere, I bet.
Yeah.
So
you too can take
take that into your local comic shop and tell them you want $25 for it. I'm sure you'll get it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, you're gonna sell it to them for $5, and they're gonna put it on their special rack for $30.
At least. Oh man. Yeah, that was a fun run. I remember this time in X-Men was a pretty cool time. And sometimes new characters stick and sometimes they don't. Bishop stuck. So
yeah.
He
look at people... him. I mean, it's great visuals.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He's got a good look.
Yeah, good powers, good look. He just fits right in. I like how the Wills just draws his like pink powers coming out of his hands. That's really good. He's just a good artist, period, though. So
yeah, down the road I do know that sometime in the 2000s they did get rid of his mullet.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, they kind of they gave him a high tight fade and got rid of the Jerry curled mullet, which was
they did that. And they also, I think they also started leaning into, well, they kind of did in the movie, but in some other pictures I saw of him as I was looking up, they kind of leaned into the fact that he's Aboriginal and started giving him like dreads and, more of a look like that, as opposed to, like you said, the 80s, 90s Jerry curl mullet.
Mullet, yeah.
They took away his soul glow.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Now that you point that out, the Jerry curled mullet. Yeah. That see if they can find another panel with him. But yeah, he does have that bushy in the back, you know, what was it, party in the back and business up front or whatever they call
right.
it.
Right. No, Mississippi right. mud flap.
Yeah.
I like that. I've never heard that. I like that.
Mississippi mud flap. Oh man.
Ben, what was the letter M on all of their faces? What was that for?
Oh, I yeah. couldn't tell you.
Is that
I've always wondered it, that actually.
Was it Magneto? Was it? But
was it some sort of marking that they're mutants? Because
yes, like, I think you're right. Yeah, yeah, I think you're exactly right.
He was kind of everywhere. As yeah. you look at like his publication history, he's kind of all over the place. It says Bishop has a distinctive M brand over his right eye used to identify mutants in his era.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. Oh. There we go. Yeah. So you look at that mane, it goes down to his mid back section. Yeah.
Oh, that is glorious.
There you go, Al. We have an assignment right. for you.
Yeah. That is ultimate 90s right there, man.
That is. That is very 90s. Oh man. All right. Well, that was a fun character. Good job, Ben. And, you know, you bought this for $1 and you got $25 32 years later.
Right?
That's a great return.
25X in a, return.
In another 30 years, you know, $50. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
You know, the minus motto of my investment firm, as I've been saying, is, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. Right?
We're not going to say how fast you're running during that marathon either.
Right.
I don't want to be accused of being a get-rich-quick scheme, so I'm trying to.
We're not going to say during that marathon you're taking a, you know, hour-long break and eating.
Right. It's a marathon that takes place over 30, 40 years.
40.
Right.
All right. So my next pick is Bane from Batman, DC Comics.
Yes.
Ooh, good.
First appearance is in the Vengeance of Bane comic book. I remember catching this at a comic book shop one time, and I was like, that cover just looks awesome. So, and this, I actually caught it after the Nightfall series. So I had to go back and kind of get some history on him because I wasn't really a huge Batman fan until the Nightfall series came out. I think I had a few issues here and there. And obviously I saw the Batman movie in 89 and all that stuff, but so I knew of him, but it wasn't something that I was seeking out. But Bane is first appearance is Vengeance of Bane, this one here, in January of 1993. Obviously, he's the one who broke the bat. And
is that Simon Bisley on the cover art? Sorry,
let me look.
He's down in the corner.
Chuck Dixon and Graham Nolan are the one that created him, but let me look on the inside cover if. It says G. Fabry on the cover.
Oh, all right.
So I don't know who that is.
Sorry. Yeah. Anyway.
No, that's okay. That's okay. It's a great cover. I mean,
yeah.
It's very Alex Ross-ish as far as like being painted.
So this was. I always thought that his first appearance was in the Nightfall storyline.
I guess not. Yeah. So when I was researching this, this came out in January, and the Nightfall series started. I think in May, so they kind of use this as the precursor to give him an origin story, and his origin story is his mom was in prison with him when she was pregnant, and she had to serve time for her husband's transgressions, who was Kingsnake. I didn't realize this, but so Kingsnake is the father of Bane, and he had gone down to this Central American country, committed a bunch of crimes. They couldn't catch him, so they found his wife or girlfriend who he'd gotten pregnant and said, well, you're going to serve his time for him. And Bane was born in the prison. And they were experimenting on this new drug that they had found called Venom, which Batman had an encounter with Venom prior to this, but this was a refined version of Venom that gives you super strength, but it does make you a little crazy and it can be addictive. So that's where he got started, and they injected it directly into his brain, which is a little different because it used to be in pill format. So this was a stronger version and a stronger method. So we see Bane growing up in prison, obviously turning to the dark side, so to speak, and sees a vision of himself, and he learns how to meditate. And so he only needs about, he does a deep meditation. He only needs about 2 to 3 hours of sleep. He gets in excellent shape by doing, here we go, the workout, Bane workout formula. 1,000 sit-ups, 1,000 pull-ups, and 1,000 push-ups every day.
That's all you need.
And you'll look like Bane when you're done.
That's what Bronson did.
Yeah.
Not Charlie, but the prisoner, the notorious prisoner in England, he did like 1,000 push-ups every day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And maybe oddly enough, both of them played by the same actor in separate movies.
That's right. Tom Hardy.
Tom
Hardy was Bane and Bronson.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Ah, okay. No coincidence there. But yeah, so he honed his mind and honed his body. So yeah, here's the picture with the in your whitey tighties, Al, you're doing your 1,000 push-ups, 1,000 sit-ups, and 1,000 pull-ups.
I'm doing probably 5 of each. No, actually, no pull-ups.
No pull-ups.
I didn't say 5 pull-ups is pretty ambitious.
I've never done a pull-up in my life.
I do also like the fact that in this high-security prison that they gave him tape to tape up his hands for his workout.
Yeah,
right.
He learned how to fight in the pit, so all prisons have kind of a fighting thing. And instead of sleep, he meditates.
It's your day one orientation. Here's the chow hall. Here's where you get your sheets and your pillow. Over there's the fighting pit. You'll probably get in that a little bit later.
It's your first day. You have to fight.
Yeah. So that's where he kind of got his start. Oh, I didn't notice this. One of the prisoners has a little swastika on his head.
Huh. He's in the same prison as Charlie Manson.
Yeah. Interesting. He dreams about, he hears something about the bat in Gotham, and so he becomes obsessed with finding the Batman and taking him out. But he has got high intelligence, obviously high strength, takes on the bat. Of course, we know the iconic Batman cover where he breaks the bat, had the little, the black.
He also has the 90s ponytail there. You'd think if you were training yourself to be an elite fighter, you're not going to give your enemy something to grab onto.
Good point. Yes, you're right.
That just shows how badass he is. He doesn't care.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's like, look, I'm going to give you an advantage and I'm still going to beat you.
That's right. I dare you to pull that.
That's Bane's equivalent of one hand tied behind his back. He's like, nope, ponytail.
Well, I guess they did shave his hair in the back because they had to put the venom tubes in there later. But you're right. When he was in prison, he did have the ponytail. So he was the only one to survive getting the venom tubes put in his head. So other prisoners had died. He was the only one tough enough to survive. But everybody, you guys probably remember this cover with
those 1,000 pull-ups helped him with the tubes in the head.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the ridiculous muscles on this cover. So I'll put the cover in the show notes. But still, I mean, we all bought it, right? I mean, you guys probably bought this one, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure I did somewhere.
Yeah.
Did he also fight a dinosaur? Or, I mean,
no, well, that's in the Batcave.
The Batcave. Yep. So,
You got the penny on the other side there.
I didn't even notice the penny.
Bane was smart enough to figure out that Batman was Bruce Wayne. Here we have the iconic cover of Batman or Bane breaking the bat. And Bane's back hair. Where did his back hair come from? Because on the cover, it was smooth. Now he's got back hair.
I don't know.
It's the side effects of the venom. When you pump that in, it also, one of the side effects is abnormal hair growth.
Yeah, so that extra testosterone. Yeah.
Yeah. So like as soon as you inject that in, you just like Wolfman.
Yeah, it's covering up all the back knee that usually comes with it too.
But yeah, I think this is one of the first times, and I'm not sure, one of the first times that, you know, Batman gets manhandled. I mean, he's worn out because his plan was to let all the prisoners out of Arkham and force Batman to fight all of the other prisoners and then take on Batman at the very end when he's weak and tired. And so that was Bane's plan, was to break him that way. So a really good story.
Yeah.
In my
opinion. And this leads into, I think we all dropped the ball, because when you're talking about amazing 90s characters that encapsulate all things 90s, this leads into one of the best, which is Azrael.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
He had the Jean-Paul had to come in and take over. And well, he didn't have to. He chose to come in and take over as Batman, and just with the most ridiculous costume.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, the Azrael. I think I got it here. Azrael costume. That
I think I had a giant poster.
Oh, you might have. Yeah, there was. I did too. I had like a poster that. Had a fold out of Azrael. They really pushed the Azrael thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if why. Well, okay, so this came off of the kind of the death of Superman.
Yep.
So I'm wondering if that's
they needed another big blockbuster event to get people to buy more books. So it worked to kill Superman. Let's take out Batman.
Yeah. But right. That cover though. Oh, here we go. There's a little bit of Azrael. But
The Kelly Jones Batman ears.
The Azrael thing did not take off. So of course they had to bring Batman back or Bruce Wayne.
I think that was the point though, is that Azrael was too extreme and he was trying, he was way too violent and he was counter everything Batman stood for. I think that was the whole bit. How did Azrael take out Bane then?
Yeah, he basically kind of went crazy of the Venom. With the Venom and here we go. Here's one of the covers. He kind of went crazy with the Venom, which the Venom does lead to insanity, I guess. And he thought he'd killed the Bat or broke the Bat, and he was just like, "Oh, I thought I destroyed you. I can't. There's no way you could come back." He thought it was Bruce Wayne, and Azrael cut the tubes that were going to his brain with the Venom, so he couldn't use the Venom anymore, and he kind of went into what would you say after a shock from not getting the drug, which caused him to, be defeated by Azrael. So, but Bane still, as far as characters go, I mean, he's still very well known. I mean, he's very well known, obviously. Most anybody that grew up in the 90s, I mean, they haven't used him much since then. They have the daughter of Bane.
He was in two movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I meant in the comic books.
I see. He was another character that was used extensive in the Batman animated series as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he was used quite a bit there. He's still like on some ranks, and I'll put these in the show notes. Several rankings. He's the third best Batman villain ever in the IGN's top 100 villains. He's up there. He's number 34. So considering he's only been around about 30 years, he's not, Joker, Riddler level where he's been around just so long that everybody knows who he is. Considering he came in the 90s, pretty late in the game, that's not too bad in my opinion. Screen Rant has him ranked 25th or 24th out of supervillains of all time. So I'll put all those in the show notes. It's kind of cool to see that. And they still use him here and there. Like I said, they have the daughter of Bane now, and he shows up occasionally. But I think with it, when you have such a big splash like this, your first round, where do you go?
Right. Yeah, you can't top it.
It's kind of like Doomsday. You killed Superman. Where are we going to go from there? And I think Bane is kind of in the same genre of that. How do you bring him back?
You can't have him running around killing Robins, because that's just not as impactful.
Yeah, so, good point as far as like the Joker goes. How does the Joker just keep coming back? But I don't know. But fun character. You can obviously still pick up reprints of Vengeance of Bane. They did a Vengeance of Bane 2. I kind of flipped through it a little bit. It didn't really capture my interest. But the first one, it had a really good origin story. And it's not often that they kind of start out with an origin story. Usually you get the character and then they go back. But this one, first appearance, origin story, we're just going to get the origin out of the way. There's no mystery.
Yep. Just launch him. Yeah, that is unique.
That's all I got on Vengeance of Bane. So I think, let's see, that would be you, Al. You're up next.
All right. So my second pick, I went with Blink from the X-Men. So she was pretty unique. So she came out, and I didn't realize this, but I was looking into it this morning, and she appeared first in that one there.
Yep.
It's part of the Phalanx Covenant. And she could make teleportation portals, but it wasn't always good, and people would die if they went through it. So she really wasn't very good at what she was doing yet, her figuring out her powers. And in this comic, according to Wikipedia, there she is with the pink hair and whatnot.
Yep.
She ends up dying, but she sacrificed herself and saved the kids that became Generation X. And then she came back and where she really made the splash was in Age of Apocalypse. When Marvel did the Age of Apocalypse storyline, and they redesigned her look and made her more confident and made her good at her powers. And from that storyline, she became huge because it was only, you know, those handful of issues in that one. I mean, it was, you know, over four books or whatever for that one summer, that big crossover event. And then that was it. She wasn't in the normal X-Men team. She was only in the Age of Apocalypse universe that storyline took place at that time. So then after, you know, it was kind of like the McRib. When you don't have it anymore, it goes away and everybody wants it.
Yeah.
And so the fans were always clamoring because she, in Age of Apocalypse, she had an amazing look and she was fun. She was a really cool character. And then, like I said, then she just disappeared and they didn't use her again until they ended up finally in the 2000s giving her own book, because fans just kept at Marvel saying, hey, give us more Blink. We want more Blink. And so then they finally did. Yeah. And apparently she was also in the X-Men Days of Future Past movie.
Really?
Bishop. Yeah. I didn't realize that because I didn't watch those movies, but yeah.
Yep, she was. I don't know if they referred to her as Blink, but they had somebody who had that power.
Yeah. Did they get the eye makeup right? Like her markings at least? No, they did not. How hard is that? No. How hard is that? It's not like she's got like a complicated, you know.
Dude, they messed up everything. I mean, Bishop, the only reason you knew it was Bishop is because he had an M on his face. I mean, they managed to get that right, but
he's an Irish guy.
It was just like I remember, and she's only, a lot of these characters in that movie only show up at the very beginning,
right?
And then they either all die or they just disappear until the end, because of course they travel back in time. And like I said, Blink, I don't even think they reference her name, but there is a character that opens up portals so they can try to fight and run away from the Sentinels and stuff. So
yep.
Yeah, kind of like in X-Men 2. When they just tease you with Kitty Pryde and Colossus and
Well,
like Days of Future Past, that opening scene, like they just like opened it up to where like they made it seem like they're gonna introduce all these cool characters that everybody has liked and wanted to see, and then not really.
Right.
Like they introduced Warpath and just all sorts of and then Bishop, but then they killed him, and it's like, what the hell?
Right.
Yeah, this is one of those characters, unlike Bishop, that got introduced but maybe just didn't take off for whatever reason. But
in this book, in her first appearance in Uncanny X-Men, she wasn't very confident. She wasn't good at her powers. She just didn't, you know, she was a sacrificial lamb, but the creators liked her and thought that they could do more with her, and so then they brought her back for Age of Apocalypse, and then, you know, really spotlighted her and made the character more powerful and more confident. And that's, like I said, that's when fans fell in love with her. I liked her. I thought she was cool and wanted to see her more often, but yeah, then Marvel, like I said, Marvel just didn't buy it and just sat on her for a long time. They didn't bring her back into the fold with everybody else when the event ended, which they easily could have.
Yeah, but I think I think this is the cover you're talking about, X-Men Alpha.
Yeah.
Kind of right there. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I remember this now.
Yep.
That was, yeah. Age of Apocalypse was a good run, though. That was a fun series.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they twisted everybody up and
there's
an excuse for them to introduce crazy new looks and sell more toys.
That too. Sometimes I'm skeptical of these, you know, alternate timeline things, but that one worked for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're like, oh, okay, we're just doing this to give something for the writers to do, but it worked. I liked the story. I was like, no, this is legitimate. Yeah, here's another one of her So, yeah. So they kind of changed her facial instead of kind of the big tattoo on her eye, or at least on this one, they kind of just did like a slit and gave her a little bit different dress. So.
So I was looking up some pictures of her from Days of Future Past, the movie, just for fun as you guys were talking. That makeup that they showed there, or design, whatever you want to call it, they actually did that in the movie.
Oh, okay. Well, more
just a little kind of slits as opposed to the big.
That's easy enough.
So somebody
was
paying attention to at least Age of Apocalypse.
Right. Kind of
understood that, but I kind of forgot about her now that you mentioned her. Then when you mentioned Age of Apocalypse, like, okay, I think I've seen her before.
Right.
Cool. Yeah, that run was good. So I don't know. Like you said, I don't know what they're doing with her now, but I guess.
I'm not sure if they really, like I said, they finally did give her a limited series at one point because of enough fan demand. But beyond that, I'm not 100% sure. And I haven't read the X-Men in a long time. So
sure, sure. Well, Uncanny X-Men 317, first appearance of Blink, is worth $10 right now. And then to back up, Vengeance of Bane is worth $100 if you have that one.
Oh, jeez. Man, so, that would have been a solid investment.
Yeah, I think I still have mine, but I don't know what shape it's in. But
right. No, because you probably actually read it, which means it's worth $5.
Yeah, it's probably worth So there you go. Vengeance of Bane and Uncanny X-Men 317. Add that to your investment portfolio today.
Yeah. You're missing out if you don't.
Yeah. What do you got for us, Ben? We'll finish the roundup with you.
My last and final comic book character from the 90s is IGN's 65th out of 100 top comic book heroes of all time.
Ooh.
And that would be Gambit.
Yes.
Created by Chris Claremont and Jim Lee, but Mike Collins apparently did a lot of his artwork. Al probably knows that just by looking at this picture. I don't even know if that's Mike Collins.
That's a Kubert.
Same difference. they list actually, I have two different first appearances for him. Uncanny X-Men Annual number 14 from July of 1990 and Uncanny X-Men 266 from August of 90.
Hmm.
So I don't know if that storyline was just put into the annual or pulled out of the annual.
I was reading a little bit online about it. There's some controversy about that. People say it was 266, but I'm pushing up my glasses. Actually, Uncanny X-Men Annual number 14 was released 2 weeks before issue 266.
Well, again, going off of the Marvel Encyclopedia, Uncanny X-Men 266 was his first appearance.
Okay.
Is the Marvel Encyclopedia proving to be a good investment? You get your money's worth on that?
So here's the deal. When you don't spend any money on it, it's obviously a good investment.
That's right.
Somebody gave this to me. So, But Gambit, just overall, he's kind of attracted more to his powers and like the science behind his powers than anything else. He can take the potential energy of any object and convert it into kinetic energy and then manipulate it and control it how he sees fit. And just the idea of being able to do that with basically anything. I mean, there are some limitations. To me, it was cool. I mean, they always pictured him, or he always used smaller objects, like the playing cards, of course, is his kind of standby and staple. That's what everybody knows him as, is charging the cards and throwing them. But I mean, he could do it with, you know, baseballs, anything. The only thing, well, not only thing, but like he couldn't do it to people or organic matter. Like he couldn't like shake your hand and blow you up, which would be kind of cool.
That'd be kind of cool, actually.
but yeah, he also, that in general was pretty cool. His backstory, I mean, he wasn't born into being a superhero. So, you know, he's originally part of the Guild of Thieves down in Louisiana. That's his mom was like in charge of him. But he was kidnapped by the Guild of Thieves after he was born and grew up with them. I don't know, just kind of a cool character. Al will disagree, but his costume is awesome.
I did not ever like his costume. That was one of the things that kind of turned me off. Like, I was reading X-Men at the time. I thought the whole thief thing and the powers were cool, but his costume just always bothered me.
So the costume that that was on one of the pages that Lee just had up. I'll be honest, I don't like that particular costume where it's like the like magenta pink, like that costume there. I like that.
Right.
But the one where it's like that kind of magenta-y pink, but it's all of it, like his leggings, his boot, like everything, you know, is the
tiger stripes. Right.
That I'm not a fan of. But this classic look here for Gambit is what I like. Yeah, that one is no go.
No, that's not a good costume.
And that's the one they put on the cover. On
yeah.
But what's also cool is with his powers, not only can he turn it into, you know, objects, but he can tap into that kinetic energy that gives him like super speed and, well, heightened speed, I should say, and strength and agility. So like he can use it for himself as opposed to just charging an object and making it explode. So that, to me, that was also pretty cool too. All around, he's a cool character. He's not just his powers, which is another fun fact of him. He's good hand-to-hand combat. He's got his charm that he is actually kind of almost like a superpower in and of itself. Just overall, I really liked him. He's a cool character. I always liked his look, always liked his powers, all that good stuff. So just fun. Just a fun character.
I noticed on this cover, Uncanny X-Men 266, now on sale twice a month. So they were doing two issues a month. Holy cow.
Yeah.
You had to be a workhorse at Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a fun issue. I have this one. That's the first issue of with Storm and him working together quite a bit. So I think she was stealing in Sudan or wherever she was at the time. And
yeah, after she'd gone through the Siege Perilous and she came out as a child and didn't. I don't think she had many memories of her X-Men past. I don't think any of them had memories of their X-Men past. But yeah, she was a child and on the streets and. I think being a thief, and that's how her and Gambit hooked up, and he kind of takes her under his wing and
takes
her along. And yeah, when they regroup with everybody else, eventually that's when she's like, yeah, he's cool. He's one of us now. So
he's also connected to Bishop. Like they had a run together, but also in the future, there's a character named LeBeau or the Witness that Bishop teams up with and kind of gets his tutelage from. And so then but they don't have the best of relationships. So when Bishop comes back to the past and he first meets Gambit, he just recognizes him as the Witness, and so he starts fighting him.
Yeah. They basically hate each other because Bishop thinks that Gambit killed Professor Xavier.
Yeah.
So I have this issue pulled up, X-Men number 4 from 1992. Where it's a fun couple panels where the X-Men are playing basketball at the Xavier Mansion.
I had this issue.
Yeah, and they have an agreement beforehand was not to use their powers, but then obviously Wolverine and some of the others start using their powers, and Gambit's here. He's like, hey, if we can use our powers, then this game's going to get real interesting, and he's charging up the basketball. That's a fun. It was just a fun couple of pages, and of course,
Julie's getting ready to set up the celebratory fireworks because that's all her power is.
Yeah, but then I think later, yeah. So you have Rogue getting blasted through the wall, or somebody. I think who it was that Gambit had used the charged up basketball to go through through the wall. So. I thought that was really a fun way to just show the X-Men hanging out at the mansion and getting to use their powers. And hey, they're real people too. You know, they're just having fun out on the court. This first issue, he's throwing little knives, and then the cards came later, I think. It looks like, if I remember correctly, and now I'm looking at this. He's got like a little dagger, and I kind of remember that. The cards, I think the card thing was kind of cool. That was a good way to showcase his powers.
Good visual.
Yeah. Plus you could have a lot of fun with. I used to, again, I had a giant poster of Gambit when I was growing up, and it was just a really cool like profile view of him, but then behind him was like a wheel of playing cards, but it had all the X-Men on it, and they were all, you know, had the pinkish green, or not green, pinkish purple glow of his power on it. So again, just a lot of things you could do with playing cards as opposed to knives.
So funny story, back in college, a guy really loved Gambit. And so he bought, you know, the trench coat and everything. And he's trying to figure out how to get the cards to throw. You can't throw just single cards like that. So he found a way to glue two or three cards together, and then they would actually throw, and they could go a fairly good distance. So I thought that was funny.
Throwing cards is not the easiest thing in the world. I mean, to make them go any distance, it's a really exaggerated, like you can't just like, oh, look, it flew. No, so, it's crazy.
So obviously it works in the comic book world, but not right. in real life.
Right. So if you ever find yourself with this power, like stick to, you know, marbles or something.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Or throwing
something that you can actually throw.
Something.
Some with some weight to it.
Right.
So the X-Men annual is worth $40 if you have that, but the X-Men 266 is worth $200, which tells me, even though the rumors online say that X-Men annual came out first, technically, that the go-to is 266 because that showcases him. Because in the annual, all you see of him is just a little bit in a couple of panels. So they don't even name him, I don't think. I'm looking at the panel now.
So see, they're following my philosophy of your first appearance doesn't count until you actually do something in the book.
Okay, here we go. I guess, no, it does name him. Yeah. It says, a man who dresses as you do and calls himself Gambit. Okay, yeah. So they did name him. Okay. Okay, all right. But obviously there's some dispute about exactly when this hit the shelves, but it doesn't matter. 266 is kind of the one I always go to. That's kind of who everybody, what everybody is in demand for. So,
right.
The cool cover. I agree. The pink outfit, not the best, but.
Well, it also kind of flies in. I mean, and you got the cod piece. It's weird, but if you're going to be sneaking around in the shadows, stealing from people, maybe don't get the most garish one piece.
Right. And the headgear.
We only have one suspect. It's the guy dressed in fuchsia. How do you know it's me? Because you're the only one.
Right.
Dressed in fuchsia. It's kind of funny, Ben, that you mentioned Gambit and Bishop. These two guys were created not too far apart, but they're still going strong. You know, these new characters stuck. You know, Blink was awesome, but you know, she took off later, but it took a while.
Yeah.
To kind of get her going. Yep. But these characters, as far as I can remember, once they were introduced, everybody was clamoring for more.
Yeah, and they're about became huge.
They're about Gambit's about to come back. They're doing another animated series for the X-Men that they just announced, and he's going to be in it.
Ah, okay. So, and if you remember the first X-Men movie, when Mystique goes to that computer database on the computer screen, it says Remy LeBue on there, his list of mutants.
Yep.
I was like, oh, cool. I didn't catch it, but I saw it online later, but.
As soon as I noticed that or got told about that, I got really excited because I thought, oh, Easter egg, they're going to make a Gambit movie. He's going to appear somehow. And then X-Men, the Origins Wolverine came out, and I don't know who that was supposed to be, but it's not Gambit. And
they ruined all the characters in that movie.
Dude, I audibly booed when that happened. Like when that scene came on, I was in the theater and I went, boo. And everyone kind of looked at me, and I was so pissed. And then they talked about making an actual, just a Gambit standalone movie, and that's never taken off. So
Was going to be Gambit, and he was on board and was excited. Yeah. And he's been vocal about how upset, you know, how disappointed he is that it never happened.
Right. Maybe he can do the Ryan Reynolds approach and just keep pestering him with it for like 5-10 years. And then finally they'll go, fine, here's a movie.
Yeah.
Why? What's your theory then on why they can't or won't do at least a Gambit character in the X series on the live action movies, I should say? Because in the cartoon, I liked it. I thought his cartoon rendition was good.
Clearly, he's got a fan base.
Yeah,
I feel like after. Well, I mean, they managed to pull it off with Deadpool, but I really think after after Origins, when they saw the reaction, I think, to his appearance, of people A, being excited about it, but then like completely disappointed. I think they're like, oh, well, maybe we should hold off on doing anything. I think they misinterpreted it as people don't want this character. And it's like, no, we don't want that version of this character.
Right.
I really think that had something to do with it. And then now everything's kind of up. Well, not everything, but kind of up in the air with, you know, Disney and Fox merging and who has what properties and who can do what. So I think that's holding some things up now too, but
sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully in the future we'll get a pretty cool, you know, I'll settle for just an appearance of Gambit in like an X-Men movie as opposed to a full movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think he should be a character in the movies. Now, the question, Ben, would you give him the pink suit?
So here's me. Age of Apocalypse movie was horrible. I did not like that movie at all. However, I loved the characters being in their comic book costumes. So one of my biggest gripes, other than the whole, a lot of other things, of the original X-Men movie that came out in, what, like 2000 or whatever, was that they just put them in black, like, armored bodysuits. And it's like, no, I want to see the blue. I want to see Wolverine in his yellow. You know, if they made him in a character, I would love to actually see him in, like, his not this all pink one, but, like, in the pink chest plate with black pants. I would love to actually see him in his comic book.
You mean the costume that's in the corner box?
Yes, that one.
They have them in two different costumes on the same cover.
You're right. This cover, hey Al, this is Andy Kubert cover, by the way.
And they mixed them up. The one in the corner box should have been on the main page.
Yeah, you're right.
but I've always liked the idea. I mean, it's a comic book movie. They're mutants, they're superheroes. There's nothing realistic about it. So why try to put them in clothing that's like, oh, well, this fits in with the universe. Like, no, put them in weird, outlandish crap. Because he's a guy that can charge playing cards and throw them, and it explodes. So it's not weird to think about him in a trench coat with, you know, a chest plate and all this stuff. And it's not weird for Wolverine to be dressed in blue and yellow because he has claws that comes out of his hands. I mean, come on.
Right.
So if he appeared, I would love to see him in, like, an actual comic book type costume, as opposed to, like, just like jeans and a t-shirt. Be like, oh, I'm Gambit, and you know that because I said my name out loud. Like, oh,
you're not wrong.
Yeah. I know some execs don't like they say the comic book to live action doesn't translate, but I don't know. I think I don't think so. Most fans don't care.
Like I said, in the Age of Apocalypse movie, seeing Psylocke and Angel and Storm in their actual comic book costumes just walking around in the real world was like,
it worked.
That was awesome.
It worked.
That was the best part. That was the best part of the movie.
Yep. I agree. Now, Gambit's a great character. So we had some iconic characters come out in the 90s that have passed the test of time, because there's been a lot of other 90s characters that did not survive. Maggot from X-Men.
Right.
I mean, he's still around, but, you know, he just did not take off at all.
not like Gambit, for sure. Yeah.
Slapstick.
Wonder if his name had anything to do with it.
Yeah, gee, I wonder. Yeah.
Hard to build a franchise around a guy named Maggot.
Yeah. There you go. That's an idea for a future episode. Worst characters from the 90s.
Right.
Oh man.
Can I just use Blood Wolf again?
Yeah.
All of the ones that weren't named on this episode are the worst ones.
Yeah, those are the worst ones. All right. Well, hey, we're gonna put a pin in this one, but that was fun. There's a lot of 90s characters to pick from. So I mean, I'm sure we could revisit this topic again, but there's some fun ones out there, that's for sure. And lots of investment opportunities, as we found out, that Ben can recommend comics that you bought in the 90s that are actually worth something.
Right. And you never know. Like I said, you probably have that sitting in a long box somewhere.
Yeah.
And you just don't know it. Your retirement is in your basement right now. Just got to go look for it
right now. Right now. No, I do have this one. Cause as you know, when you get into comics, I got into comics after this came out. But you go back and try to get all the issues and all that stuff. So thanks, guys. Appreciate it. We'll revisit this topic again, and we'll see what we can come up with. So until next time,